And then once it's recording, just clap so I can sync sound.
I can't clap. One of my hands are fucked up. I got stabbed through my hand. I can't open it. See?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, damn.
Damn.
Are you left-handed, Charlie?
Nah, right-handed? I'm right-handed. I don't really use that hand for much. It's all right.
Take it away.
Welcome back to It's All Bad. I'm Keith. I'm here with
Russian Danny.
Mike. Russian Danny. Mike. Charlie. And straight from the East Coast, the Savage, King of New York.
That's right, baby.
Dude, thanks for coming on. We're so happy to have you.
I'm happy to be here, man. Guys talk really good about you. They love your show. Somebody told me today that's all they listen to, like in their car every day.
I'm going to guess you were born in New York.
I was born in Brooklyn, New York, Bensonhurst, yeah.
Oh, nice. And that's where you grew up, too?
I did. Yeah, I grew up in Brooklyn, so I was 14 years old. And then, you know, when you get a little bit of money, the family, they moved to Staten Island. So we went to Staten Island, and that's where my life actually went out of control. moving to a different place, right?
Yeah.
That's at that age, I had to fit in.
Yeah.
And I wasn't I was always into graffiti. From 5 years old, I was mesmerized by it. So I was like I was a mischievous kid. You know what I mean? So like, yeah. I used to play in abandoned buildings, run on the train tracks. We used to break the lights, whatever, you know, shit like that. And when I moved to Staten Island, there was just the jocks, the people that played sports, right? And there was a lot of people that came before. Professional sports player where I'm from. So they were very serious. I was very small. I wasn't good at football. I remember they wanted to play rough touch. And, you know, the kids are a lot bigger than me. I'm 5'3". So, like, I'm running with the ball. The dude's running with the ball, and he's, like, running straight with his arm out. And he fucking hit my head. My head hit my back. Like, you know, I couldn't believe, you know, like it was too much for me, man. So there was the jocks and there was the kids that did drugs. You know what I mean? So I tried to play basketball. I tried to do those things and I was not good at it. You know, I didn't have the coordination and shit for that. I was like a skateboarder, graffiti writer. So it wasn't for me. Yeah. So obviously I got sucked into the wrong crowd.
It's so interesting because, like, I always say that, dude. Like, I'm telling you, like, because I'm 50 and, like, through the, you know, like in the 80s, you know, when people were different groups. But I'm like, New York was the first thing where it was like skateboarding and graffiti and hip hop and punk rock was all meshing there, you know?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's where it started like that. You know, it's fucking fascinating to me. I think it's also interesting because you're a great writer, but writers and skateboarders, they're also all prone to getting fucked up and going to jail.
Yeah.
You know, it's part of the game.
It's not something that you're rewarded for. You know, you do it.
Right.
People will say, why are you dedicating all your time to this?
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't explain why. And I was willing. Listen, I can't help it. Just like, you know, people are into certain things. Whatever it is, model trains, bodybuilding, whatever it is, I'm into this. And I'm a person that refuses to live my life miserable, right? And I did I'm on the show because I made my life very miserable. Searching for freedom. But, you know, when I searched for freedom, it got me incarcerated. Everything went, you know, everything was completely fucking backwards. And, you know, a lot of it, I don't know where this came, because the kids in my neighborhood, I'm from Bensonhurst, Mafia Central. These kids were fucking Guidos. They were, you know, fucking fist pump dancing, and I liked Public Enemy, and I loved graffiti, yeah. And yeah. I painted, I'm going to send you the picture, you'll post this. 5 years old, I painted myself black with shoe polish. I wanted to be Michael Jackson. I had the jacket, but I grew up in Bensonhurst. They fucking stabbed Al Sharpton there. I was an oddball, So my father was like an abusive alcoholic. I lived on a block of all Italian immigrants, and I have a little Polish in me. And this is interesting, right? Because I was always told to hide that, right? So my last name is not an Italian last name, so I had to make up this story. Ellis Island, they changed the name, all this shit, right? And yeah. But that's the fucking, you're told, you don't realize how these things affect you, but you're taught to lie. Mm. And you're not proud of who you are, man. You're hiding fucking a part of who you are. And that's where it starts right there, man. If you can't be yourself and you got to suppress that, you can't be proud of who you are. You feel less than everybody. So, I'm making these connections now older on in life. I went through a lot of fucking therapy. And I'm starting to realize, how little things escalate into bigger things,
I mean, just to touch on something that you said about both of you guys said about the whole skating and graffiti, kind of going hand in hand, I'm going to backtrack a little. For me, I was I was never good at fucking skateboarding. I moved here when I was 7 from the Ukraine. I didn't speak a word of the fucking language, until my sister gave me my first skateboard when I was 10 or something. She got a paycheck from working at some fucking vegan, the first vegan restaurant probably in the world, And she got her paycheck and she was like, here's a bag of weed and here's a skateboard, And I was never good at skateboarding, but I was like, fuck, this is great, but it gave me a persona. And we went to the Venice Pits when they were still when it was still Venice, nice. And we went there to skate and we seen all these cats painting, and we're like, fuck, we need to get some spray paint or else we're never going to be good at fucking skateboarding, And we did. And then we went back and we painted it the next weekend and our shit was super fucking toy, but it was I instantly felt a part of it. It was I was this weird fucking Russian kid that didn't have the right clothes, that didn't have the right, I didn't fit in. And all of a sudden it was it didn't matter what fucking color I was. It didn't matter what fucking, how my accent sounded, where I was from. It was oh, you're doing this? Come on.
That's what graffiti did for me,
Yeah.
Yeah.
It gave me a brotherhood, and it's weird because everybody's so standoffish but when you're in,
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm in.
How old were you when you started writing?
All right, so I remember being in third grade writing, writing R.A.P. in bubble letters. In fifth grade, I got suspended 3 times for graffiti. I used to go to the bathroom, take the inside of the marker out, and write.
Wow.
And I never stopped.
In the fifth grade?
Fifth grade, amazing. 3 times. Yep.
Now, were you going to school in Benson? Were you going to Catholic school?
Not Catholic school. I went to PS 48 on 60th and 18th.
Oh, okay. It's so funny when you said that, it rings such a chord. For whatever reason, the things that punk rock and hip hop turn up, whatever the sentiments of that music make Italians, I grew up Italian-Irish, they make them crazy. They take it, it's really offensive in that community. Now, maybe that's a mild level of just, I think we know what a little bit of it is. Right? Yeah. You know what I mean? For sure. But it was very strange to see how would it be. I was always like, what do you give a shit?
Do you care
what other people are singing? And there would be people be outraged. How dare they sing?
No, it's
things?
Every.
You're like, you say worse things on Sunday at dinner. What are you talking about?
Every race, Italians think they're better than Irish. Irish think they're better than Italians. It's fucking everybody thinks they're better than everybody. No, this is nothing, no matter what nationality you are, if you call a fucking Puerto Rican, Dominican, or Dominican, they want to kill you. It's all the same shit. It's all...
And the insanity is Italians love to marry Irish.
Italian it's Irish, crazy. Yeah, it's a big thing.
There's this thing, yeah. And it's like, wait, but okay, cool, awesome. Yeah. It's gonna be a fun. This is gonna be a fun 40, 50 years. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
How old were you the first time you got loaded, Charlie?
Like, all right, so know, I would say that under peer pressure. All right, so I told you in Staten Island I started using. I did take a couple hits of a joint when I was 11 years old with the kid in my neighborhood. I don't know if I should say his whole name. He wrote Sec HDD. I would love to get into a whole story about that group of kids in particular. They were called HDD, Hoods Doing Damage. Let me tell you this, and I will put my fucking head on a chopping block, right? I never met white boys tougher anywhere than these kids. I've been to Arizona. I've been to fucking Mojave Desert prison. I never met white people that were as tough as these kids. So those were the kids that I grew up around. And I was soft to them. They loved me, but they used to take my hat, my star hat. You know, they used to fucking cross me out and then hug me. It was very fucking, I had a scooter. They took it and they ran it over. So I was a little soft. I wasn't born tough, right? So I have a reputation for being a fucking savage. But I wasn't born that way. I was constantly in fear. My father was a heavy drinker. He was heavy-handed. Everything you get a fucking smack for. And get a smack from him, your ear will ring for 3 days. So, I was terrified, man. So when I grew up with those kids and then my father, I learned how to instill fear into people and how to be terrifying, to people. But that's all protection, man. Let me be honest with you. When I was a white kid walking through the train station, right? Because graffiti writers were out at night, right? So that I come out at 9 o'clock at night. I start writing at 2 a.m. So when I'm in fucking East New York, a train station, and there's kids coming down the platform and I didn't have tattoos, they would fucking try to smack me, take my hat. They played a knockout game, try to knock me out. When I got heavily tattooed like this, they don't fucking do that no more. They walk up to me hard and then they're like, it's like, watch out, motherfucker, I bite. So I learned how to carry certain weapons. Look, fucking, you come out and I'm like, yo, motherfucker, what's up? What the fuck you want to do?
Yes.
You know?
Cleaver.
So you look like this with a meat cleaver. People tend to start leaving you alone. It's not only that, I would fight anybody. Yeah. Remo. Everybody knows Remo from New York. King Graffiti's fucking 6'7", fucking big black kid. I'm like, Remo, let's fucking fight. He's like, Charlie, bro. Like, he don't even want to fight. I'm like, because he knows I'm going to fight. And, it's fucking, I'm fighting, bro. And you know what? Look, you guys can see I've been through so much pain that I had to seek a spiritual solution. And I had to start living a different way for self-preservation because I turned a teenager in 1994, right? So I grew up with people walking around drinking Budweiser, smoking joints, right? Shooting people. It was normal. So 94, I become a teenager, right? I'm 14, 15. Giuliani came into office, was like Hitler. He wiped everything out. Organized crime, everything. So I would get on the train.
Destroyed New York.
I'd get on the train. I'd be smoking cigarettes. You know, when I grew up, and you guys know this, but the younger kids don't know, you were smoking on airplanes and trains and all that. Yeah. So when I became like at the age where people start doing that, it was super illegal. But I was trying to call the old New York down, and I put myself through hell. I have over 100 arrests. I wouldn't talk about a hard head. I lived and did what I wanted for a very long time. And it put me in a lot of compromising positions. Forget it.
What was the first, like, can you think of the funniest or craziest story you've ever had from drug use?
You know, People told me you were going to ask me two questions, right? Somebody told me they said, did you ever smoke PCP?
Yeah.
And did you ever see a ghost?
Yeah.
So I got that all in one story.
Yeah.
Wow.
When they said that, I was so fucking happy, right? So, growing up, right, my best friend, he was a graffiti writer. He writes Dexa, right? His crew is DFT, Dust Fiend Team, right? Yeah. I smoked angel dust every day, all day for years. So I'll go a little farther back, right, real quick. When I was a kid and I first started smoking weed, I did everything back to back. So I drank a beer. Then I smoked weed, like maybe the same day. Then the next day I did mescaline. Then the next day I did acid. One day I was walking around my neighborhood, right, and I seen the older kids, and they were like, Charlie, come here. And they came and they grabbed my face and they gave me like three shotguns of like Purple Rain dust, right?
Yeah.
And I had a fucking out of body experience. I was like out of my body looking at myself. And I couldn't believe how high I got, and I fell in love. I fell in love. I smoked dust every day after that. So you know, I went through a lot of, I had a hard time finding my identity. I was into Marilyn Manson and goth, and I was fucking a raver. And I experienced, I was a club kid. I went to Limelight. I was promoting there at 16 years old. I feel very fortunate and blessed, but I experienced a lot of every culture you kind of can, you know, but, These kids blew the dust on my face. I started smoking it all the time. So Dexa, I remember I was smoking 3 weeks straight, right? So I was like a runaway. My household was on. I'm not saying, listen, you guys, I'm sure we all know, I didn't come from like where, it's hard to say nowadays because all the knowledge we have that, you know, was I abused as a child? Was I not? Like, it's a thin line. You don't really know. I'm still confused about it, but. I'll just fucking talk, man. I remember I went out for Halloween when I was young, 9 years old, right? And a kid up the block threw like a frozen egg at me, like 90 miles an hour, and it hit me right in the fucking eye. And I went home and I had a blood clot in my eye. And I was in the bath and I was trying to hide it from my mother, right? She was like, still giving me baths. So I was that young. And I feel bad for my mother, but I mean, like, this is what's up. And I was trying to hide it from my mother, and she's like, oh my God, what happened? I was like, I got hit with an egg. And she was like, you little fucking asshole. And she like spit in my face because I was trying to hide it from her. But, you know, these are things that now doing all this self-searching and everything like that, you know, I could see why I was unruly. I'm not saying it's a green light, but I remember another time we went on a family vacation, which we never did. I was about 9. We were in Virginia Beach, and I was in a cab with my family, and I was like a mile away from the hotel. I was 9 years old, and I insisted on, let me walk to the hotel. Let me out. Let me walk to the hotel. And they did. They let me walk to the hotel, and I got there right. But I remember these little things now, and I'm like, whoa. Like when I see a 9-year-old kid, like, you know.
Walking to a hotel in New York.
Like,
no.
I don't know. So you know, look, I would like to say, you know, my parents do love me. They did the best they can. They were 20 years old when they had me. My father was a heavy drinker. My mother was completely straight, but she was like neurotic. So I have the worst qualities. I'm like a fucking compulsive drinker who fucking has OCD and has to have everything fucking military fashion. So, you know, But back to the dust story. So I'm staying at Dex's house, and I'm smoking dust for weeks, right? I wake up one morning, and I'm blind. I'm blind. I cannot see. This kid's, like, going around, delivering dust, doing what he's doing. I'm holding the back of his shirt with my eyes closed, and he's dragging me through the city. So later on that night, we go back to his house. And they roll up whatever dust, and I hit it, and my brain went bing, and things kind of dropped like sideways, like almost like the top of a, when you're watching a movie, it's black on top. It went like bing, and it dropped a little bit. And I like right there, I kind of lost it, and then like it went around, I hit it again, and it went bing, and everything fucking dropped. And there was a girl there. And I feel bad to say this. It is what it is, man. And like, you know, this is what happens on drugs. But she said she was a sharp-tongued girl.
Yeah.
And I fucking backhanded her. Boom. Right? Hard. Everybody tackled me. And they were holding me down. And I felt like my teeth came out of my mouth. No one hit me. They just had me down. I was freaking. I was throwing a tantrum. I felt like all my teeth came out of my mouth and I was chewing on them. Right? So this night goes on. So now I'm like this. I overdosed, obviously. This night goes on. So I see. This is the ghost part. I see my friend on the couch sleeping. And I see him right here. And I'm like that. And I grab this one, and I could feel him. And then I go to the couch, and like, I dragged my friend. He was like, dude, he's like, what the fuck are you doing, Charlie? I had him by his feet. I was dragging him to the other one so like I could put them together. That's not even the half, so... That was a really bad night. So they dropped me off on my mother's doorstep. So my mother, they don't know what to do with me. I had gold teeth. I'm fucking, I'm in the house. I'm in Bensonhurst now. My mother, my father broke up. She was back in Bensonhurst with somebody. I'm at that house. They convinced my father to come get me. And my father picks me up. And I get to the house and they lay me down in bed. And I was like a newborn baby. I was amazed at cartoons. I don't like cartoons. I never really did. I love South Park now and certain shit, but you know, like I wasn't into like anything but graffiti really. So he was laying in the bed and he was rubbing my head and he was like, You hurt your brain. I kept saying, what happened? And then I was like, I smoked Newports and I drank 40s. I smoked Newports and I drank 40s. And this is crazy. His girlfriend comes into the room. And she gets like down. And she's rubbing my head. And she goes, you know, Charlie, we love you. I pulled my fucking dick out. And like asked for my she told me she loved me. That's like all I knew. You love me, then suck it.
Yeah.
So they fucking, I was telling them about this place in Arizona called The House. It's called The House. Man. It's in Mesa, Arizona. It's a halfway house. And I kept saying, they were like, you got to go. And I kept saying, The House. They were like, what the fuck is The House? I was like, Arizona, Mesa, Arizona, the house. They looked it up. They gave me a $200 moving fee. They put me on an airplane. Now I'm dusted out of my face, wind up in Arizona, had $16 in my pocket, and I'm at the airport in Arizona like I'm lost. And people are like, what do you mean, shunned? They're like, cowboys, what do you mean? You're lost. I'm like, I'm lost. I don't know. I got to get to the house. And some like righteous person like took me to the halfway house. And that's where I was introduced to the 12-step fellowship programs. And I started to get involved with that. But we can back it up a little more if you want, because there's a lot over there. You know, there's what you want back there.
What else? Dude, here's something that's crazy, and I want to know what you think about it. So we had Rude Jude on here, you know, and he was telling us, like, when because he was like, yeah, I got, you know, he's like, I tried PCP once, but fuck that shit, you know? And then I was like, oh, I loved it. I did it every day for however long. He goes, yeah. Oh, but you're a writer, huh? And I go, what? And he goes, yeah. He's like, it does something else with y'all motherfuckers, you know? Like, it clicks, like, something clicks in writers where it's like, I don't know what it is.
Even back in the day in Star Wars, like, you know, I don't know how much business I should put, but it's whatever, man. So, like, those kids were 12 years old smoking dust doing masterpieces on trains.
Yeah.
They were fucking 12.
Yeah.
They were 12, 11. Just kings doing those whole cart masterpieces. Yeah. 12, bro. Wow. It's like fucking mind.
Yeah. They were that young?
Yeah.
They were 11, 10, 11, 12, 13.
Yeah.
Damn, I didn't 14, know they
were
that young.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's the thing is, I think it does, like, because when I started smoking, like, and for us, it was like, it was wet, you know, we would just dip it. We didn't have so whatever, same shit, you know, but like, I remember, like, overnight, it was like, my shit went from like pretty straight letter, whatever, chill, mellow, you know, like three colors to like, just fucking went off, you know, like I have a photo of this truck I painted and I still look at it, you know, and like, what, I'm from this crew, RTH, Ragtag Hustle, and I was like, the spell out I did.
This is mind blowing to me. You know, I'm the prez of RTH, right?
Of New York RTH, of the,
But it's the same, you live in LA?
Yeah.
So I'm your president.
Yeah, you're my president.
No way.
Yes.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
Get out of here. You're
serious.
It's
the same RTH.
Same RTH, yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, did you know that, Danny?
Give me 20 push-ups.
Dude,
so I did a spell out and I painted it, and then I did a spell out that said, rock, tweak, heroin, you know? And everybody lost it. They were like, what's wrong with you? Like, are you stupid? Like, you're out here, like, repping that shit? I was like, yeah. I mean, I'm not stupid, but I'm, you know, like, hey, but I was like, but it looked pretty fresh, though, you know?
And yeah, you know what? I was oblivious to the message I was sending to people, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes, if you get me started, I'll pull out a bunch of knives, I'll get crazy, right? But that's not what I try to convey nowadays, because the truth is, I don't want to live that way. I don't want to hurt nobody. I don't want to be hurt. I became like a hippie. Like, I love everybody. But I watch now, when I see, it just started to register, and I guess it comes with maturity. When I see people write graffiti, right? Now, I remember being 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, looking at graffiti, mesmerized by it. I wanted to know what it said. The same kids that people that really start writing graffiti, they're at real graffiti writers start writing at 12, 13. So when I write Dust Fiend Team, Smoke Dust, who's looking at that?
Mm-hmm.
A fucking 14 year old, bro. I don't convey that message no more, man. That's where BTM came into place. Bless this mess. I left RTH alone because it meant recruited to hell. That was like, you know, the meaning of it. But I'm listening to a song. I'm driving the other day. I like negative music. I have some random shit on Cameron, Joel Santana. And Joel Santana's like, I'm a gangster. I'm a gangster. I'll fucking shoot you. Like, so I was saying, I'm like, I thought to myself, like, Joel, you ain't shooting nobody, bro.
Yeah.
Like, I changed it because I know these dudes are like, you know, they're talented and they're good. And like, you got guys like Future, and I'm just saying, man, talk about Molly Perkins. He don't get high, bro, himself, you know, like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So we got to be careful of what the kids that are watching this now that are going to watch me are a lot younger than me. Mm-hmm. And I don't want them to hit somebody in the head with a hatchet, you know, and like.
It does stick too, right? Like, that shit sticks, you know, just how anti, coming up in the 80s was, and how different the attitude towards, like, anybody who didn't like what you liked, listened to what you listened to. Like, you know, it was like things were so overwhelmingly negative. It was like, you basically, the message was like, don't trust anybody, you know, and do drugs.
Yeah.
Like that was pretty, it was like, don't trust everybody, do drugs. And when you do drugs, burn everything down. Like that was the message. Like, no wonder why my mom would come in and I'm listening to fucking Dead Kennedys. She's like, what the fuck is this? What happened to you?
My goal was to run myself in the ground. This is true. And this is, I'm a complete 180 from now, so I don't want people to get this fucked up. But my goal was to do drugs till I felt like I got washed up and like kill some cops and catch the death penalty. Like easy way.
Yeah.
Like that was my goal. And I felt obligated. I felt like that was what I had to do.
Right.
And then I met a girl. I realized, you know, maybe I'm in love. I want to. And then I realized I'm a bad influence and I have her in danger. And then I started to say, whoa, I'm miserable. I don't have to live this way. I don't have to go to jail. I don't have to die. I'm in control of my life. I could fucking, I could turn this around. And I did. But you know.
Yeah.
What got you started in your prison career?
I love that. I was like, oh.
This is, I try not to talk about the same things that I talked about on the first podcast, but basically, at 14 years old, I was a full-blown alcoholic.
Yeah.
The older kids in my neighborhood fed me drugs, hard, heavy drugs. They made me try heroin, everything, right? At 14 years old, they would just give it to me. Yeah, Charlie, do this. And I didn't even say this in the last podcast because it sounds like a lie. I was 14 years old. I said I drank all day, right? I drank 12 40s that day. I drank 12. And some older kid run, seen me. It was 4 in the morning. I was in front of a bagel store. It was closed. And he comes, hey, what are you doing? I said, nothing. I was like, you know, like staying out. And he gave me a handful of volume. I didn't know what they were. They were, you know, little blue things. And he gave them to me, and I was like, and I fucking drank them down, and I started to get disoriented. So I started to, like, try to walk to where I was going, maybe home, and I started, I don't know why Xanax and shit does it, because I'm not a thief besides that, but every time I take Xanax, I started checking car doors. And what do you know? I find the car with the keys in it. So I never drove before. I took the car, I pulled out, and I started sideswiping the whole block of fucking cars. And the back bumper was hanging off. So I'm driving. Cops were parked, and they seen me. And I took them on a little chase, but it's funny because I think it was in the paper. It was like 30 miles an hour. It wasn't, you know, I didn't want to crash and die. And, you know, I got out on foot. They whacked me with the mag light. They split my head open. I lost my gold teeth. I remember. And my parents had a pins petition on me, which was like a threat. A pins petition, I'm not sure what it means. I guess we could look it up. But it's when you're out of control that, like, courts will get involved. So when I got arrested for that, I'm a fucking idiot. I think they were going to let me go, and I threw a tantrum and said I didn't want to go home. I was high. And they took me to Spofford. Now, if you guys don't know what Spofford is, it's in the South Bronx. This is the early 90s, 93. And I went to juvenile jail, which I cannot explain.
In the South Bronx?
Yes. From Staten Island.
In 90?
From Staten Island, from 93, yeah.
Jesus.
I was the only white boy. I was probably 4'9", and there were 16-year-olds in there that were huge. So
this is when the South Bronx was literally like one of the most dangerous neighborhoods in the world. Like fucking Aleppo, you know, the favelas, the South Bronx.
I mean, it was that's where my life took. And you know what? I swam really well in that environment, and I thrived. So, you know, I have a personality. People like me. I rapped really good, believe it or not. I don't think I showed fear, even though I was like shit in my pants.
Right.
So
I had the same thing happen, Charlie.
What'd you say?
I had a similar thing happen. The thing that you're talking about, the pins thing, I know what it is. Here it's called a ward of the court.
Right.
And it's basically like, you know, like, okay, his parents can't handle him type shit, right? So I got thrown into Los Padrinos Juvenile Hall, which is, I mean, I'm like you. I was scared shitless, but I, you know, I thrived in there as well.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you'll agree with this. Like, it's weird. Once you, you know, it's so scary the first time you go to juvenile hall.
Yeah, I remember.
But once you,
like adjustment.
Once you adapt to it, you no longer have a fear of going there. You're like,
no, this is kind of
great.
Yeah.
It's kind of great.
Story of my life.
Yeah. I've never been in jail in New York, but I'll tell you, I shot a commercial in Rikers Island, like in the closed wing.
Yeah.
So there wasn't even anybody there. Even in that empty building we were there, I told my buddy, I was like, man, I can feel the fucking
tension. Okay, so check this out, Keith. I have over 100 arrests, right?
Yeah.
That's my county jail, right? So I've been there about that many times. If I try to explain to people what Rikers Island is, I couldn't even begin. I try to say, like, it's like a medieval castle. I mean, but the inside, like, Keith, how could you explain that to someone? They have no idea.
I don't know how to explain
every other fucking inmate got his face cut. You see the weirdest people that you would never even see on the streets of New York. You see them in there. Like these fucking freaks of fucking life and from another planet. I couldn't begin to tell you what Rikers Island was like. And like, it's a really bad, evil place.
Now, how did you end up in jail in Arizona?
Oh, this is a good story, my man. You're going to like it. Because it's all bad, bro. I go to Arizona. I get introduced to the program. Obviously, I'm 20 years old. My brain cannot wrap around the concept of not drinking ever again. So I would get small periods of times clean, right? And maybe I would get a sponsor, maybe I would do those things, but I wasn't willing to take suggestions. I wasn't willing to do what it took.
Right.
So I would get 4 months and then I would relapse and I would crawl back because I'm homeless in Arizona. And there's nowhere to, in New York, if you're homeless, you go on the train. You could sleep with your head against the window. You could go into any building or any block, go to the top floor and be covered and sleep. Arizona, you have to sleep behind a bush about, you know, 2 feet off the ground. There's nowhere to go. Nowhere. So it's rough. So
it's some kind of tumbleweed.
Yeah, I mean, it's all red. It's like there's nowhere to go. So you're fucked. So you have to go into some treatment. So I get a little so what were we talking about? So what were we talking about again?
Arizona, how you ended up in prison in Arizona.
So I get sober. I am blown away at myself, right? And I keep blowing myself away in life, which is good. I surprised myself, but I was able to accomplish a lot of things. So I went out there maybe in like 99. Cell phones weren't really popular, but I got a cell phone. I got my driver's license within the first 30 days. Now, these were major accomplishments for me. People, you know, like getting a cell phone then was hard, but I had good credit because I never had credit, so they gave it to me.
Yeah.
So I got these things. And I would fuck up here and there. And somehow, these older, when I talk about older, I'm talking about like 60, 70 years old. They met me at a meeting. Now, I'm in like, could you imagine? Like, I'm in a town like fucking Tombstone, Arizona. You walk in there, it's like, it's almost like a saloon, right? With no drinking. There's these men in there. They're like, I fucking spilt more beer than you fucking tasted. And, you know, they're like that. They're like, shut the fuck up. Sit down. You can't talk. And I winded up, there was this guy that took a liking to me, older, 60, 70, and he was like a circuit speaker. He spoke. He was very well known in the program. This is a guy with 50-something years, and for some reason he liked me. He introduced me to this lady named Marilyn. She owned a spiritual bookshop, right? So there's me, my crazy ass. This guy introduced me to this lady. She gave me a job. She had 50 years sober, whatever. I start working at this place. Now, this place was a big deal for that community of people, right? For addicts and right? So, like, psychologists and everything, that's where they went to buy their medical books, like, you know, for diagnosing people. And there was also, like, lots of grievance books. When people died, their family came in there for some search of you know,
answers.
I would have to show them the books and they would fucking spill their guts to me. And I would like counsel these people. And I was always a kind soul. And like, you know, so I'm working at this place. I start hanging out. Now it's me, 20, whatever years old. And I'm with all these old timers. And, I kind of get caught up in it. I don't really notice, right? And everybody cares about me, showing me love. I'm working at this place, and there's a kid from New York that came there, right? And he comes in. He's like, "What's up, man? You're CH?" And I'm like, "Yeah." I have a tie and khakis on. And he goes, "Yeah, I want you to come out. I want you to write with me tonight and, you know, do some weed paste." Nah, I'm not into weed paste and all that. So I'm just like, listen, bro, I don't do that no more. I changed my life. And the kid goes, "You changed your life? You're in your fucking khakis and your tie? You're a fucking asshole, man." And like walked out. And I walked back behind the counter and I remember thinking, I'm CH. What am I doing? What the fuck am I doing in a tie? And I started to drink beers, right? Now, this is everything you got to understand is a blur to me because I was drunk 24 hours a day. So this lady, I don't know if like I went back into treatment, but I remember that there's a point where there's a rapper named Necro. Mm-hmm. He's a violent Jewish white rapper. And I had a reputation for being nuts. And he reached out to me on fucking on MySpace. And he told me he had beef in Canada if I would roll with him and like hold him down. And I said, yeah. And I went with him. And I went on this tour with him. I had a really great time. I rapped for him. He told me to put together a demo, all this shit. And I was sober. And I remember being in Canada and we were walking into a Dunkin' Donuts, right?
Yeah.
And there was like a transvestite at the door, right? Like we're, you know, about to leave. And Necro goes, "If this dude says something to me, I'm punching him right in the face." And I was like on some spiritual shit, trying to be. And I was trying, and I was like an idiot. I should just get my mouth shut. I was like, "This dude could say anything to me, and I'm not doing nothing." And he was like,
"Yeah.
Really, security? You know, like, you're not going to fucking do nothing?" And I remember right there that I puffed my chest out and that's what it took and it was over. I go back to work. This lady convinces me to go to college. She was convincing me to go to college. And I was like, if I'm going to go to college, I'm going to go for what I want. I want to be an actor. And she was like, okay, we'll go to school for acting. And I did. And I went to Scottsdale Community College. And I fucking got into this acting class. And after they loved me, I was good. And after 3 weeks, they gave me a student loan for $5,000. It's the most money I ever had in my life. I really never had probably more than $100 or $2 in my life. They gave me $5,000. I went to Banana Republic. I bought a white button-down collared shirt. I bought a used Audi. And I went right to the bar.
Oh, shit.
You guys are going to like this story. So I go to this bar. Now I'm dropping. I'm asking for Long Island iced teas. They're slipping and breaking out of my hands. I can't even hold it, right? But I'm tipping the girl. She just keeps bringing them. I don't know if I'm giving her like hundreds. I don't know what I'm doing, right? I'm giving her money. So she's bringing me the drinks. I got to be a little careful how I word this situation. So bear with me, but we could chop it up later about this. So I'm at this bar. There's these two. Now, this is when I learned what is it? Corn-fed motherfuckers are? Cornbread, yeah. Right?
Corn-fed,
there's these two. So I'm a young, 20 or 23-year-old maybe, whatever it is. And there's these two big corn-fed motherfuckers, right? Big, blah, big. And they keep looking at me, right? So I'm looking at them. They're looking at me. So eventually, they kept looking at me. So I look at them and I'm like, what's up? And they're like, yo, the bar's about to close. We live right there. And it was like literally like 100 feet away. They showed me the house, a white house. They were like, why don't you come over after the bar? And, they told me like, oh, we've been to New York. We love New York. All the small talk, right? They asked me to come to the house. I say, okay. I go inside the house. They hand me a Dixie cup full of liquor, right? Absolute, whatever it was, right? So I drink it, right? I start to drink it. I'm blacked out already, right? They're like, come on, Charlie, what happened to the car? We're going to my friend's house. Now, you guys know this shit. I don't know what tweakers are. I don't know what crystal meth is. I don't know what any of this shit, right?
There you go.
They bring me to a trap house. So I get to this trap house and I sit down and the vibe gets very bad. I pick up on it right away. I feel like I'm in great danger, right?
Yeah.
So this dude comes out of the fucking attic with a guitar and he starts rapping and it was so bad. It was like, I felt very embarrassed for him and ashamed and like, it was really fucking strange, to say the least. It was just weird. Right?
Right.
So these two dudes, these are big guys. They get up and they start giving each other body blows. You hear the echo inside their body. They're fucking beating the shit out of their torso. Boom! You could hear like almost the heart come out of the chest. I'm like, what the fuck? They go into the kitchen. They're breaking the cabinet doors were swinging open. They were breaking off the wall. And I'm saying, now I know these motherfuckers are trying to intimidate.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting in the middle of the couch. There was a box cutter on the table that they used for cutting weed. It was an old, thin, purple. It was very, it was almost harmless, right? But yeah. I take it. They both sit down on the couch and they start like looking at each other. I had all that money on. And they're like, why don't you take Charlie home? And the other one's like, nah, why don't you take him? The other one's like, why don't you take him? They start doing that shit. Like, who's going to fucking catch the Vic, right? So I go, you don't want to do that, bro. And they were like, what? And in my head, I'm like, Charlie, shut your fucking mouth. I was like, nothing, man. So one of the kids decides to take me. And they start bringing me down. You guys know, like, we don't really have that in New York, but those alleys, like dirt roads, like backs of people's houses.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the dude, it's very awkward. We both know what's up. It's a terrifying situation. And, I got in trouble for the shit and I didn't kill a kid, so whatever, I'll tell you. So the kid starts to like try to make small talk with me, but it's very weird.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I go, yo, man, is it worth it? And he's like, what do you mean? You know, is it worth it? I was like, is it worth it, man? I was like, it's fucking $4,400 worth it to you. And he was like, yo, man. And I was fucking like, I put my arm on his head and I was like, whack, whack. And I got him in the fucking throat twice. The third time he grabbed my hand. I was like, get the fuck out of the car. And he ran out of the car. And fucking, it was a stick shift car. And like, I didn't know how to drive stick. So like, I closed my eyes. I tried to like meditate. I was like, okay, step on the clutch. Like I knew, but I couldn't even turn the car on. Right.
Yeah.
So I run to a gas station. I run to a Circle K. Right. And there's like a Mexican girl cleaning her car. And there's like, I look at her. I just felt so bad. Because like a car was running, I just was gonna hop in and take it. And I looked at it, and I stood there, and I'm like, I can't do that. And I looked, and I heard the truck at the gas pump. So I fucking run to the truck. I hop in. The guy's in the Circle K. He's in the window, like he sees me, and fucking runs out the store. I try to pull off. He jumps in the bed of the truck. So I have this guy in the bed of the truck. Now you know I'm calculating. I'm like, yes. Attempted murder, carjacking, kidnapping. I'm toast. Right. I am toast.
Yeah.
So I start to wobble the truck a little bit to like get him scared. And he was on the box and he was not scared. And I got to a light where I ran on foot. And it's funny, I always think of this. Eminem has a song in one of these songs where he's like, I'll run and hide for 5 minutes. And that's like literally what I did. I was so dehydrated from drinking and it was so hot out that I hid under a car for like 5 minutes. And I was so thirsty. And I came out from under the car and I like walked a little bit and I turned a corner and there was mad cops and they got me. And I went to a Maricopa jail. I was in the cell and I remember this was a number in my head. I was like 17 years. I'm definitely getting 17 years with the rip. You know, that was just in my head. I don't know why we do that, but that's what I kept saying to myself. Yeah. And I was like, you know what? I got 17 years. And I went, I took a nap. And I was processed and all that. And the bottom line is I winded up copping out to I explained to the judge that I relapsed, all this shit. I had no prior felonies, and I winded up taking like a 5-year deal. You know what's funny? What I think personally, I think the guy's truck I took was a tweaker because they couldn't find him. They didn't. There was no like report. There was nothing. So I winded up. I winded up. You know, I got very lucky, and I've been blessed throughout my life. But anyway, I went to Fourth Avenue Jail. Now that's Sheriff Joe Arpaio, for people that don't know. So that's, they give you pink sheets, pink boxes. You're all in pink, but everybody's in pink, so it don't matter. And stripes. Now you're talking about, now I'm from New York, right? So you go to Rikers Island, it's every man for himself. So when I walk to my bed, right? Now people don't know this type of gangster shit, but out where I'm from. But if there's a black person in your cell, you can't sell up with them.
Yeah.
You got to go in there and be like, I can't live here. And whether the COs put you in solitary, you got to take that. So, but I get to my cell. That's not the issue. And a white boy comes to my cell with like my blankets and a care package and coffee and stamps and envelopes. And he's like, hey, Hood, you know, this, what's up? Yeah. He's like, my name's Cracker. And he was mad cool. Yeah. And, he gave me my bedding and he kind of explained me the rules. He explained where I sat and ate, my table. And now I'm from New York where everything's very mixy. So yeah. I had to like kind of, they're called the Pecker Woods. I had to be with the woods. And I have no problem with that. I'm white. But there was a kid in there, a Spanish kid, Smiley. His name was Smiley. The clown things. And he became best friends. He was my best friend. So we used to walk around the pod and all the white boys used to look at me and go like this, like, remember what color you are, motherfucker? I smiled and be like, fuck them, because the whites and Mexicans run together in prison. Yeah. So I wound up becoming best friends with Smiley. I could not help it. He was my cup of tea. We loved each other very much. And the Mexicans asked me to run with them. Yeah. They would like jump the fence, fight the head of the whites, and come with us. You belong with us. They're like, you're Italian, you're Latin, blah, blah, blah. They're breaking out all this shit to me, right? Because I'm going to be honest with you. The white kids that were in there were not as fast as me. They were kind of like, they were calm. You know, yeah. They were like, they weren't like loud, like, you know, I'm used to like, you know, Brooklyn and like, fucking people let's all work out at once and do everything as a mob and like intimidation. Like I was into that. I'm not going to lie, you know? Yeah. So they told me to like jump the fence and they made the head of the whites come talk to me. Oh, Cracker. And he came and he goes, Charlie, he goes, you're fucking white. He goes, that's your seat over there. He goes, you're white, bro. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I am white. I'm not doing that. So I stayed with the white boys. I got a real good story for you coming right now. I stay with the white boys, and I get shipped off to a 3 yard. You know, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So I get set off to like a medium, high medium yard. So I go to Mojave. In the fucking Mojave Desert, Cochise County, where the movie Tombstone's filmed. Like, you know, it's like, it's fucking the shit you can't make up. I wind up at this fucking place. People on death row. And I was tatted up. So check this out. So I get to prison. Now the head of the whites, he goes, listen here, brother. You're gonna carry yourself as a white man. You ain't gonna listen to no rap music. You ain't gonna let no black folks smoke behind you, blah, 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 right? So I'm like, bro, 50 Cent, I think, was like popular then. I was like, bro, I'm from New York. I was like, I listen to rap music. You know, I think I said, could be wrong. I think I said, are you going to buy me my Walkman? Like something like that, right?
Yeah.
He was like, just carry yourself like a fucking white boy. And I was like, no problem. Because I'm fucking white. And I carry myself like a white, carry yourself like a white man. So I'm like, no problem. I am a fucking white man. So I wound up becoming, he was like a fucking shyster piece of shit. So he was in there for bank robbing, and he was a tattoo artist. I mean, if I could show you the tattoo, I got really good. My whole body's done in prison tattoos. But so I'm new, so I have to money didn't hit my books yet. I got arrested with all that money on me, so everybody loved me. It's like I feed the whole pot, you know. Nobody wanted me to go to another unit.
Yeah,
I was like rich in there. So I'm trying to explain this to people that don't know. In prison, we have something which called store, which means I have a store, which a lot of ramen soups and stuff like that. And an inmate could come to me and be like, I want 2 ramen soups. And then you're like, give me back 5 when store day comes. So, right? So you owe double, triple, whatever it is. So he's like, go to the store and get hair grease. And he's going to teach me how to make ink. So I get the hair grease. We make a manila envelope. We cut a piece. We put a lid on top. We get toilet paper. First, we get the toilet paper. We put in the hair grease. You light it on fire. It becomes like a candle. And then you put this cylinder over it, and it captures all the black smoke. So I'm in the front. I'm by the bubble. Where the COs are. So I have a locker. So I have this shit in my locker stinking with a fire flame all night long with them walking by and doing checks. That's like a fucking massive, you know, like I'm not gonna say it's a massive charge. You get in trouble for it, right? And I make it through the night. I make it through the night and I burn this hair grease. Now you gotta scrape it off. And this shit is like, how do I explain it? It's like you get a fucking dot on the floor and like step over with your shoe, it leaves a mark like that long. It's like, you know, really potent.
It's like soot, right?
It's soot. That's what it is. And that shit is fucking, you get a speck of dust and wipe it, it turns the whole black line. So I'm trying to get the shit in an aspirin jar. And so this guy, you put a little mouthwash in, for some reason that works. And you can make ink. And so I make my own ink and I give it to the dude. So he starts to tattoo me, and they go to move my bed. Now you got to understand, right? People don't know how fucking gangster this is. They don't understand, right? This is with nobody. This is away from home. They're going to move my bed to another unit and house me. So I tell the dude, I'm like, yo, can I get the ink back? And he's like, rub it on your chest. And like, he hit me like, I didn't even know what that meant, really. It took a second. I never heard that before. It took a second to register. And he was like, rub it on your chest. And I was like, what? And I was like, let me get the ink. He fucking threw it at me. I caught it. He threw it at me mad fast. And I caught it. And he like started to approach me at the same time. And he got like crazy, whatever he said. And I took my shirt off. And I said, let's go in the bathroom. Bro, the whole pod was like, oh my God. Every race. They were like, this kid. Hey. The motherfucker did not go in the bathroom. He didn't go. Yes. He walked away. He didn't want to fight me. So he was planning, I heard, to stab me in my sleep. But after that, my nickname was Guido, and I pretty much did what I wanted. I wasn't a part of any affiliation. I talked to everybody, and they kind of just let me do my own thing, and I never really got into a fight. And after that, everybody was like, this kid is we know he's going to fight. Like, you know, I knew who. But people don't understand, like the shit. Even when I fought the kid, I fought somebody with a knife. When I got stabbed 17 times. I told that story before. I don't want to keep, you know, because the same. I don't know what I should do. I wound up getting stabbed 17 times, but a kid had a knife. Yeah. And I said, "Let's go, motherfucker!" And I fought that kid with a knife. Is that dumb? Now, yeah, I'm crippled in my left hand. I didn't know, but I thought that's what gangsters did. Right, so there's a funny ending to that story. I wind up working on an oil truck. Put two and two together, Mike. Right, I wind up on an oil truck. Mm. So this guy one day he tells me, he goes, Charlie, I know who you are. He goes, you're a two bit hoodlum. You're a two bit hoodlum. I'm like, Louie, what are you talking? I know you sell weed. He goes, I know about the stabbing. And he starts like telling me this shit. He starts telling me he knows I write graffiti. And I'm blown away because I didn't think this guy would fucking do homework on me, but he did. They liked him.
Yeah.
But he was abusing me at the same thing. Like, you know, he was mean to me. He always said because I'm third generation Italian, right? Like nobody knows about the Polish shit. Now you guys know. But, you know, I carried myself like an Italian, but I was third generation, so you call me American. And so I go, yeah, I go, that motherfucker, because the kid, when that happened, he pressed charges on me. He pressed charges on me, right?
No way.
Yeah. Wow. He went to the payphone and pressed, I was stabbed to death, and he pressed charges on me.
Yeah.
So I woke up, I was handcuffed to my bed, but I was like, you know, I told this guy, and he was like, you know, with the stabbing, this and that. And I'm like, yeah, but because when the kid pressed charges on me, the detectives came to my bed. They go, Charlie, you got to press charges back. And I go, I don't do that. And they're like, yo, you fucking idiot. If you don't press charges back, you're guilty. You're going to go to jail. You're facing 20 years. And I was like, I don't do that. God would take care of me. Long story short, the kid winds up dropping the charges, this and that. But I tell this to the guy. I'm like, yeah, but you know, I didn't press charges. He goes, you fucking idiot. If the kid pressed charges on you and got cops involved, that don't mean you're a gangster. It means you're fucking stupid. And I started to learn from that point out, you know. All this fucking retarded shit I did. I should have fucking ran from the knife. I should have pressed, you know, I was all fucked up, man. I didn't get it. I'm not, sometimes, you know, you think being a fucking, you know, I really put myself through some hard shit.
Yeah.
But that, it could have been avoided. A lot of situations I've been in my life could have been avoided. So RTH recruited to hell. I was literally there, man. I put myself through hell. And once I got a taste of like learning that I could change my life and live good, I would never take away what I have now for that type of life. And I want to stress to all the young kids that I got stabbed 17 times buying a bag of weed, right? So I copped crack, I copped dope, I copped crystal meth. I did all these things, nothing happened. But I got stabbed to death buying a bag of weed. I got to an argument. Right? So you never know where it's going to come from. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah,
that's true.
And drugs and alcohol destroy your life. Alcohol, which is like nothing because it's accepted, but it makes you make the worst decisions. It makes you say fuck it to everything. So imagine from 14 years old, you know, to now that I lived my life drunk every day. I don't even know how I have friends. Mm. How do I still have friends from there? People love me. And, you know, I got a lot of love and people are rooted for me. But I'm blown away sometimes. I'm like, how, like my best friends, I'm like, how are they still friends with me? I was such a fucking. I'm very lucky. I'm a lucky guy.
Dude, I've met, I've ran into people, I've ran into like people, you know, I get sober and then I run into some homies that I know from like back in the day. And they're like, dude, you know, and first off, I get that look where they're like shook that I'm alive, you know, because I kind of like fell off the scene for a bit, you know, and then like whatever, which comes with the territory when you're like a junkie tweaker, you know, like, and like, you know, graffiti was no longer my main priority, but like I run into these dudes, you know, and they like, it's like they seen a ghost, you know. And then they're like, they'll go to get my number. And one dude told me, he was like, dude, he's like, you know, I had you blocked in my phone for 5 years. Like, I had your number blocked on all social media. He's like, fuck. He's like, I didn't, when I first saw you, I was like, oh, this is bad. You know, like, I didn't even, he's like, motherfuckers didn't even, weren't even rooting for you to get sober. You know, like, that's how bad it was. But it's those, but a big part of that is like, is those beliefs that are instilled on us. Like, in, you know, when you're, like, I used to say, like, man, I'm a product of these streets, you know, like, I'm a fucking kid that moved here from the Ukraine. You know, I grew up in West Hollywood. Like, I'm, you know, like, what the fuck, you know?
But West
like,
Hollywood's a little fucked up. I live that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, in its own right. Yeah. In its own right, you know. But I was in a car accident where this girl nodded out behind the wheel, fucking, you know, coming back from cop on New Year's Day. We went under a flatbed truck, you know, like, and almost killed us both. You know, it was one of those car accidents where you see it and you're like, oh, those fools died, you know, like they died in that thing. And I just remember my mom telling me like, hey, you have to sue her insurance. You have to sue her insurance. You have to sue her. And I was like, mom, what the fuck are you talking about? I was like, I can't, I don't roll like that. Like me telling this to my own mother, you know, she was like, no, you have to, like you, like you're not suing her. And she was like, trying so hard to like explain to me, like, you're not suing your stupid girlfriend that almost killed the both of you, which you probably should be, you know, but like you're suing her insurance. This is the reason that people pay like money every month, you know, and like you have fucking however, I have $18,000 in hospital bills because obviously I didn't fucking have insurance, you know,
right?
And like, and you're like, she's like, you have to sue her insurance. And I'm like, nah, mom, I can't do that shit, you know? And it's crazy. She got a new car. She got like a fat fucking insurance payout out of it. I got nothing, you know? I still have a fucking hospital bill.
I did the same
thing. Yeah.
I'm the same mentality.
Yeah. So I get it.
I know
it.
Better now.
I get
I'm
it. Yeah,
same.
Yeah, I'll sue anybody.
It's an old, I don't know if it's an old Italian phrase or it's just a really, really cynical, dark phrase that my grandmother used to say because she was a really cynical, dark lady. But she told this to my dad, it passed down to me, which was never worry about the bullet with your name on it. Worry about the one that says to whom it may concern.
I think I heard something like, similar.
I heard that, I was always as a kid. My dad, he would tell me that shit. I was like 10 and I was like, okay.
I mean, you should probably worry about the motherfucker with your name on it too, you know?
I was always like, but wait, if the one that has your name on it, and he's like, but the point is that one you can't do anything about. That's it. He's like, but it's that random shit you got to walk out for. You know, like when everybody says duck, you duck. Yeah. Don't be the one guy who's like, what's up? Look over there, you know?
It always happens when you're feeling good, unexpected. That's always.
Always. Yeah. Always. Always.
I mean, but like the dudes, God. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure you could, Charlie, you could relate to this. Like, I met I rolled around with this kid when I was 15, 16. I kind of like ran away from home and I went and stayed at this like weird garage that a bunch of my friends lived in North Hollywood. And there was like a daycare center there. It was our friend's mom that ran a daycare center. And like, there was just a bunch of us that lived in the garage and we would just go paint at night and do whatever the fuck we wanted, you know? And we ended up getting like, we ended up getting her daycare shut down because there was so many fucking, it was like, she was like fostering kids and had a daycare, you know? Like, we got it shut down because we were such fucking, but we were like such pieces of shit, you know? We're like, fucking, we were like proud of it. Like, you know, it's so insane, the insanity that comes with this, you know? But there was this one dude that like, rolled around and he had a sawed off shotgun and he'd never went anywhere without the sawed off in like in his little fucking, I don't even think he had a JanSport. He had like an East Pack, you know, like he couldn't afford the JanSport in his East Pack, you know, and he had, you know, and I just remember look like that was my hero, you know? And I was like, man, like that's who I want to be like, you know, like I want to be like that dude, you know? And it's like, and that was the first gun I shot in that alley behind that house, you know? And it was a sawed-off shotgun. I'll never forget. I shot it directly at power lines. Like, I probably, like, I mean, it was just so dumb. Like, you know, we didn't know what we were doing. But we were like, you know, you had to fit. Like, I didn't want, you know, and they were like, yo, you got to do this. You got to do it, you know?
I was walking the train tracks as a kid after school, right? So I'm on the train tracks. We used to walk from one station to the other. I find the lead pipe on the tracks, right? So we start, now the tunnel starts getting dark. And I tell my boys, I'm like, I'm going to throw this at the third rail. And they're like, don't. Before they said don't, I threw the pipe at the third rail. It went boom, like the flash of white light that came from that shit. I was blind. I couldn't see. You heard people in the train station like, oh, my God, baby started crying. So, like, they fucking helped me get out of there. And I was blind. And after like 3 hours, I started to see like yellow. Like I seen everything in yellow and it came back. But like, yeah, bro, all the fucking stupid shit, bro.
All the stupid shit.
Unbelievable. I'm so, Keith, I'm so lucky to be alive, bro.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, how did you end up turning it around?
Yeah.
Okay, so check this out. At 34 years old, I'm with this girl, right? And I'm working very hard jobs. That's when I worked on the oil truck. And that guy was, like, very mean to me. And then I started working on an ice delivery truck. So I used to go to every borough. And in front of the delis, they have the ice box. And I used to fill the ice box up. Yeah. But I used to go to Sam's Stores every day. I used to have to hustle them. Like, I would go open the box, look, and be like, yo, you're short 2 bags. Take fucking 3. I had to get rid of the pallets on the truck. He sent me out with pallets every day. I had to get them off. So I had this job. I lived in East New York. A lot of people know it's like when I lived there, I lived on Blake Avenue, Cypress Projects. The pink houses were on back. I was the only white person. I'm going to be honest. A lot of people are from there. They're going to see this. But when I used, you know, on Euclid Ave, on the ANC, when I used to go, it was real live, bro. And I used to get out of the train station and say to myself, like, I hope I make it home. You know, they used to kill cops on the 4th of July there. It was bad. But I'm getting high, right? So I get in trouble when I get high. So I'm out in that neighborhood at 4 in the morning, going to the store. They have like the bulletproof glass, drinking 40s. I had a fur coat, a white fur coat. I was crazy. So I attracted a lot of trouble. I attracted a lot of fucking trouble, and I looked like this. So I had this feeling of pending doom. I already been stabbed 17 times. I had all these bad things happen to me. I start to feel like, Charlie, you're going to die any day. It's coming. You're starting to get mouthy with people. They're going to kill you. So I go home. I get high. I did an upper. You can imagine what it is. I get high. I see my girlfriend look at me with a face of disgust. She's disgusted. I'm disgusted. I look at her. She's a lot younger than me. I go, I'm such a bad influence. I have this girl in great danger. I thought of her mother. right? And I said, if her mother knew that she was with somebody like me, how that would hurt her. And I went into the bed and I went to sleep. I woke up. I was 34 years old. I woke up, opened my eyes, and I said, I don't got to do this, man. I don't have to die. I don't have to go to jail. I don't have to die. I don't have to go to jail. I could change my life. I could change my life. I could create a good life for us. And I walked to the computer, and I loved Arizona, right? And it was hot there, and I liked the hot sun. I love it. Oh. But I couldn't go back because when you – I have a track record, right? And, yeah. And by nature, I fuck things up. If I would have fucked up again, everything's a felony in Arizona. So if you buy a weed pipe from a store clean and you walk out with it, it's a felony. So I already had a prison number. I was a felon. If I would have got in trouble one more time, they would give you football numbers. Second offense, you're getting 10 years or better. So I was smart enough to know, you love the Arizona. They had the best burritos in the world. Carne Asada, they had this place for Roberto's. I still dream about the food, right? Even though I changed my diet. That's what it was. But anyway, I was that fucking good. I wanted to get it like delivered to me, all types of shit. But I got a little lost, man. Where we at?
Oh, you woke up and you're like, I don't have to live like this.
So I go to the computer and I type in cheap halfway houses, Florida. Now, I have Medicaid, right? So I know nothing about, at 34 years old, I know nothing about private insurance, right? So I start calling these places. They're like, yeah, we take you horseback riding. We go golfing. I'm like, this is amazing. I'm like, I'm coming right now. They're like, great. What insurance do you have? And I'm like, I have Medicaid. They were like, click. They would hang the fucking phone up on me. So I went about through 9 of them. And then I called this place. And same spiel. I went through, I'm going to change my life. They were like, what kind of insurance do you have? I was like, look, man, I have Medicaid. They were like, well, could you get a move-in fee? And I was like, how much? And they were like, $900. I was like, let me see what I could do, man. And I called my mother, and I called my grandmother, and I called this one, that one, and I got the money together. Now, my girlfriend at the time was very in love with me, supposedly. She ain't around no more. I don't know what the fuck happened, but hey. Right? Crying hysterical, don't go, you're going to leave me. I said, don't worry, I got you.
Yeah.
I go to this place. I get sober. I wind up working at this place after like 60 days. And I go, they're like, you can't live here and work here, so why don't you try to find a room? I found a room up the block, Haitian dude's apartment. I didn't give a fuck. I flew my girl down, and I got heavily involved in 12-step program, and I started to help people. And that's like the key to get out of yourself, right? So I had people really liked me. I had a lot of sponsees. I had like 12 sponsees, and I started to help people. And then I opened up my own halfway houses, and I spread myself too thin. After some years, I had 50 beds on my own, and I was like the only I had 6 houses. So
what part of Florida?
I was in Delray Beach.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Delray. I know Beach. Exactly where that is. That's so, right. Yeah, Jupiter.
It's like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So, I changed my life. But what happened was, right? You know what happened? Rush in. You know what happened? I started to write graffiti. I started to write graffiti illegally. So I started going at night and I started bombing, right? Kids started going over me. I started going over them. I got all caught up. So the kids that I was helping, I was like, hey, I can't help you anymore. I'm not really living right. I wasn't like, I felt like, and this was the right choice, obviously, but I shouldn't be guiding them and helping them with life decisions.
Were sober at that time.
I was sober, but graffiti is such a thing that
you get caught up.
I just fell in love with it. I started to get the itch and I started to go out and I started to do it. Now, what happens is when you're writing illegal graffiti sober, it's very scary.
Yeah.
You're out at 4 a.m. on a fucking highway with fucking trucks zooming fucking past you on a wall. You get anxiety. And what would take away that anxiety? A fifth of vodka.
Right.
Yeah.
So what happened was I started doing that. I went to Miami. I started, it's not really a big thing out there. Well, Miami a little more, yeah. So, but graffiti's not a thing out there. But I started bombing streets. That means, you know, on the sidewalk, writing on shit where a cop could just turn the corner. You know, it was just like writing in New York. And I got caught a lot of times in New York. So I went to the store and I got a bottle of liquor and I drank. And it was all downhill from there. I started to say, fuck everything, right? So I acquired all these goods. So I started to make a lot of money. And I acquired a Rolex. I acquired a brand new Lexus. Everything I thought I would never have. I surprised myself. I got these lifetime things that I wanted. I remember being like 18 years old and my grandma talking about my Uncle Peter's Rolex. And in my head, I said, I'll never have one of those. Like, I just said that to myself, like negative talk. You know, I will not. Yeah. I will never have that. But I wound up getting those things. And you know what I realized? I have a Seiko. I like it better, man.
Yeah.
I just do. I like it better.
Yeah.
The Gucci sneakers. I like Air Max better. Like, I like the cheaper version of everything. I'm the type, I would choose instant mashed potatoes over real mashed potatoes.
Well, you know, I'll kill a box of instant mashed potatoes.
Dude, instant mashed potatoes are so fire.
It's the demon in me, man. Yeah. I'll tell you. Just like.
So I was not impressed. So I'm like, wow, I'm working so hard. And then
it didn't make you happy.
It didn't make me happy. Then my taxes were so high. I'm saying I'm doing all this. They're taking half my fucking money. Then I'm going to the store. They're taxing me there. Fuck taxes. I'm getting money. I don't want to do this no more. And right. I gave it all up. And I'm an extremist. I'm sure you guys know that by now. with the stuff that I sold, I bought a camper. I bought a Keystone Bullet 1800 RB. A camper. It was beautiful. Murphy bed. Brand spanking new. My mother had a house in Pennsylvania. I put it on a property, and I lived like a king. I loved it. I wish I could still live that way. I want to incorporate that into my life, and I just got my license back. I'd like to get a pickup truck and go to National Forest and live that way, but I have a girlfriend now with a kid. Things are different, but my life is great. But I would still like to have that thing around. I enjoyed spending time in it.
Where are you living now, Charles?
I live in Massachusetts. You know, so my life got really good, man.
Dude, that's great,
though. I'm 6 months clean.
Nice.
There's something that I never understood. And I don't know if you guys are in the program or anything, or Russian, you know about this shit. I never understood step one. All this time, 20 years in the program, it's the first step. You hear old timers say, that's the only step you got to get right. But step one is we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. So I could say, oh, yeah, I'm powerless over it, which that means nothing, right? Because I don't even know what that means. And then you could say, yeah, my life's unmanageable for sure. But if you're powerless over something, right, you will do whatever it takes to avoid that, which means living by a few simple guidelines, right? I never understood that. This time, it hit me like a ton of bricks. I was like, oh, my God. Like, now I follow whatever my sponsor – my sponsor, right? So every day, I get into, like, little stupid arguments with my girlfriend, right? I'm ready to run. Yeah. I'm ready to run back to my trailer. I'm ready to run. I call him. He goes, Charlie, you're the fucking problem, bro. Like, you're the common denominator in all this. You're going to bring yourself – you're going to meet the next girl, the same thing's going to happen. Either you're going to be alone or you're going to learn to like, and he says that, and I go home and I say what he says. Like fucking.
Freedom.
He's saving my whole life. this girl, she's crazy over me now. But I mean, if she gets mad at me, I go outside, I call him, I come back. She's crazy for me again. So, you know, I'm really hanging in there. I take all suggestions. The problem is, guys, is that I don't know how to get out of my own way.
Mm, yeah.
Right? I don't know how to throw my hands up and say, hey, let me not force the situation. You know, like let me just let go. Whatever's going to be, going to be. And that's what I've been doing. Listen, I had 2 DUI convictions recently, right? Like, my lawyer calls me. I beat them both on my 6-month day. I mean, that's fucking God, bro. That's not normal. Yeah. I told them, I will show you. I will fucking scan them. I told the state trooper, I'm going to come back, put a shotgun to your chest, and smoke it. And I pissed in the cop car on myself. And I got the paperwork. That's what I did.
Man.
And I fucking beat it. 6 months on the day. So, like, this shit shows me that it works. But, you know, I'm such a good dude, man, but I was just so misled. And you know, like, these older kids giving me all that shit and everything. It's like, what can I say? I'm very happy, though. Sober and clean, I could conquer the world. I'm going to chase acting. I want to be like the new Joe Pesci. So, like, I'm making it work for me. You know what I mean? I'm going to make it work. And hopefully that happens. And if not, it's not meant to be. And I'll work at a tattoo shop. Whatever. Fine. I'll be good.
Yeah.
I got a friend. I'll share this with you real quick. Because I got a homie that's like a really big old school graffiti writer, you know, and I really looked up to him as a kid, you know, and then I got sober and he's sober. We were talking, like, he's been sober for a while and we're talking about it, you know, and he was like, oh, you write? And I was like, yeah, you know, and he goes, oh, what do you write? And I was like, oh, decaf, whatever. And he goes, oh, cool. He goes, how's it? And he told me this and it fucking ruined fucking graph for me. It's so fucked up, you know, where he was like, oh, he's like, so how is your primary purpose supposed to be to help another alcoholic when you're out there feeding your fucking ego, writing on other people's property, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck, like, why did you have to, you know? And like, and it's so fucked up where, and it's like, and I'm the dude now where like all the fucking, you know, like all the writers that come in, they're like, oh, whoop, 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 you know? And like, and so I sponsor all these fucking kids, you know? And they're like all the racking kids, like, you know, like I got this one from, you know, like my sponsor, that's a dude.
My sponsor's he's amazing, right? This is my sponsor. He told me, now I get, when I go on Instagram, I do it every day, right? I talk on Instagram, I show, I fucking get crazy. People buy all my shit, all my shirts, everything. So he's seeing I was going to do It's All Bad. So he called me and he said, Charlie, you got to have, he don't want my ego. He don't, last thing I was like, if you go over me, I'm going to kill you. Because I'm not going to do anything. But he told me, like, he was trying to give me balance, right? Like, you know, watch what you say. I gave you guys the raw, right? Because I want you. Let me tell you guys something right now. From talking to you guys, I love you very much, right? I want you to have a lot of views. I want you to be successful. And I'm going to give you what I got. But after this, I did that first interview. This is the third one I'm doing this week. It's over. You're the last one I'm doing. So he told me today. Yeah. He told me today, I said, you know what? I'm going to give my all to these guys, and then I'm going to stop. He told me, stay off Instagram for 90 days, all this shit. You know what? Russian Danny, right? I can't. I got to make a living, so I got to kind of do that. So I'm going to talk to him about that. But you guys got the gold. That's it now. You know what I mean? So
From an acting perspective, by the way, if there's any, like, so I was a struggling actor for 10 years. That's all, you know, that's, I always had a night job. I never cracked it to where I didn't need another job, you know? Yeah. And then I walked away from it for a long time. Now I'm back getting into commercials. But if there's anything, you know, teachers or ideas or classes you want to run by or people you know in New York, I used to know a lot about that world. And if I can be helpful, you know,
I mean, I would love,
I know that world, man. It's a fun, it's crazy business.
I would love, right? Now, I'm not trying to be like, you know, I just want to be myself. I would love to be in a movie like Training Day and just be the villain all the time, like you like method acting. If you could plug me in with anything, I live close to New York, I got a car. I mean, I would greatly appreciate any fucking thing.
Even if you, whether you are or not in SAG or whatever, but I can forward you one that they'll do like free webinars and seminars and shit where they'll tell you how to self-tape. All the shit I have not done. Like okay. I have not done, I've been totally useless in these last 3 months in terms of that. I should be learning how to self-tape because that's the only way it's going to probably be going forward.
Got
to
do it.
But
it's action.
I got to figure it out. Anyway, hi, I'm Mike Vail, and I will shave.
Hey, we're fucking crack at it together, man.
Yeah. Word.
You know, yeah. I mean, that's pleasure, something, man. It's weird where it's like, it's something that I was, people were like, oh, why don't you model? Why don't you do that? And I was like, nah, that shit's for lames, you know, and whatever. And I was like, and then finally, like, you know, like maybe about a year, year and a half ago, I was like, all right, you know, because I work at a sober living and I'm like, all right, God, what do you got for me? You know, like, what's my purpose? Like, what do you, you know, like, and I just kind of started like every day I wake up and I'm like, what do you got? What do you got? Where do you want me to be? And little by little, like I got a homie that directs music videos and he put me in a few music videos. And then I was in a short film and then I was in another fucking music video. Now I'm going to be doing another short film that literally like I got to go film some shit for right now, you know? So dude, Charlie, you got this. Like you got the, like you're so, you know, like you're a dude, like motherfuckers just want to have, like they just want to have you around. Like you're such a, you know, personality and you got a thing that like,
and that's,
you know,
like honestly, that you can't, the whole fucking thing. Yeah. Like that, people will tell you all sorts of stories, and it is the truth. Like the work is super important. You want to be the greatest actor in the world. If you want to be fucking, what's his name, Daniel Day-Lewis, then yes, it's all about the work and the study and the practice and the whole fucking thing. But if you want to be a working actor, the first thing you need to be is someone that people want to fucking hang out with. And that's the key. Like, that's how you work.
And I want to hang out with you. Fuck. I want to, like, you know, I want to drive across the country.
It's the same here. It's the same here. You know? I love you guys, man. Yeah, even dude, you, Joe. Love you. Quiet. Charlie, me and you are going to hang out.
Yeah, dude. Fuck yeah.
Dude.
Oh, well, man. I think we're good, right?
Yeah. Charlie, do we need to get a bonus story for the thing or no?
Yeah, if there's one story that maybe you told on the other podcast, we like to get a bonus story for our Patreon subscribers.
Oh,
if one comes to mind.
Dude. All right, guys, so that's it?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
That's great, man.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Dude, that was great.
So listen, let's connect. Let's try to let's stay in touch. I mean, you know, especially Russian Danny.
Yeah,
you know, let's stay in contact. Dude, check on me, man. I most need the def. Support.
Oh yeah, I got you. Dude. I got you. I'm gonna text you my I'll shoot you my number right now on Instagram. Yeah, let's stay in touch.
All right.
If I ever come out that way, if you ever come out this way, whatever, you know, like
I'll come visit you when the time's right. Yeah.
I was gonna say anything you want to plug, like T-shirts, the movie, whatever, man. Shout it out.
What's up? This is Charlie the Hustler. My Instagram is Charlie_the_hustler. My website. It's charliethehustler.com. I got t-shirts on there, artwork. I do custom work, whatever you need. I got you.
Fuck it. Thanks, man.
Dude. Yeah.
All right.
We're good?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
All right, guys.
See you later.
All right.
All right.
All right. Love yous, man.
Yeah, love you.
All right.
Hey, thank you
so
much.
Take care, man.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, man. All right. Later.
Hey guys, Russian Danny here. Thanks for listening to another episode of It's All Bad. Please like and subscribe on our Instagram at It Is All Bad. If you want to be on the show, our email address is itisallbadpodcast@gmail.com. We got some merch up for you guys. We got shirts you can order through the Big Cartel. You can find a link on our Instagram as well. And please keep listening. Please keep giving us your guys' feedback. We love all of you. Thanks to our guest, Charlie the Hustler, for coming on. You're the fucking man and we love you. That was such a fun episode to do. If you want some bonus stories and some extra content, check out our Patreon, where every week when we have a guest on, we have them tell a little bonus story and we drop it on the Patreon. And there's some way out shit on there. Man. Thanks a lot. We love you guys and we'll see you next week. Peace.